Well, now to the post-pandemic recovery and the many calls for the government to think green and to think sustainability in its big projects that both stimulate the economy and future-proof the country. Institutional investor groups with trillions of dollars under management, we spoke to them last week, the Trans-Tasman investors, have urged governments around the world to plan for a sustainable economic recovery. And the Climate Change Commissioner, Dr. Rod Carr, is advising the government to stimulate the economy in a way that capitalises on climate change progress, deals with two big problems at once. Our guest is Professor in Mechanical Engineering at the University of Canterbury, Dr. Susan Crumdyke, an expert in transition engineering. She argues more skills training is needed to propel the capability for designing and building these sustainable solutions. She says sustainable energy starts with common sense at home. Dr. Crumdyke's convening and teaching a new online transition engineering course at Canterbury. She's a trustee of the Global Association for Transition Engineering. Her latest book is Transition Engineering, Building a Sustainable Future, Tackling Climate Change and the World Decline in Oil Supply. Susan says the actual work of change is done by people who know how the current systems work and who are bold enough to work out how to change them, but that more upskilling is needed in this area. Susan, welcome back to 9 to Noon.
Thank you for having me.
You emailed after our earlier conversations with those investors and with Dr. Carr because I kept saying, how do we do this? And there are three elements to that. There's the political, there is the business interests of legacy asset owners. And then if you get over those two hurdles and you get the investment funds put forward and they're lining up and saying we've got them, then there's the actual practical engineering challenges. That's what you want to speak to. Could you explain more about transition engineering?
You bet. If you picture the expectations that we have built up over the last, say, since World War II, things have gone kind of a particular way. We have hiccups and bumps and bubbles that burst and things like that. But basically, we have an idea now, three generations on, of how the economy works and how politics works in that. All right. So picture that as business as usual, this expectation. And then you keep having this nagging problem, climate change, you know, and now we've got COVID and you've got degradation of biodiversity and you've got all these problems. And you go, well, I think there's a gap between that business as usual expectation and where we actually have to go. And a lot of people then start going, yeah, I can see that. We've got to do something else. We've got to. And you start to see, well, we could, but then you go, how do we? Right? So filling that gap between our expectations and where, if you can move your mind forward for the next 100 years, where we actually will be, because failure isn't an option. We're not going to just blow it, right? We're going to figure out how to get to the new place we're going to. And that will have to be done by doing it. And so the engineering part, I think actually what we need is something completely new, because what we've been doing up till now has got us where we are. And that completely new is a integration of the engineering and the policy and the business, funny enough. And that is what we are doing right now. So transition engineering isn't a new field of engineering. It isn't a, you know, like electronic engineering or something. It's a transdisciplinary field of engineering because, like, say, safety engineering or security engineering, you have to have safety in everything you do. And right now, and well, okay, for the last several decades, we need transition in all the projects that we're doing, because that's actually the job. And it has to not just be transdisciplinary in engineering, but it has to be interdisciplinary across finance, policy, business, and it has to be mind-blowingly innovative, really, because we got to invent the way we're going to do things from here on.
Okay, so take us on that path. As we said, you've got the politics, right. You've got the politics lining up, you've got the finance lining up, because both private investors and the government are standing by to spend billions. So take us to the next step we need to start right now, And if you see some of it already happening, describe it.
All right. Like I said, we've got to think about a new thing that you haven't seen before. And it isn't just training, because training we've seen before. I would call it action training, action research, action business, that you get started and you start where you are. So you can't dream of new technologies that you don't have. You start with what you've got. And then, okay, you have to turn loose and train up the young folks. They're coming through, you know, I get to see them, seen them for 20 years now, these young folks coming through engineering, and they're ready to change the world. Yeah. And then they get bootstrapped into the way the world is. And after about 10 years, they come back and they want to have a chat and they're like, I really want to not do this anymore. I don't want to do the old thing. I want to change the world again. But give them 10 more years and they'll be stuck and they won't be able to do anything. So take the people who do know how to do stuff, know how the world works now, team them up with the people who are willing to see the future differently. But now we start working on changing things in the context not of sort of beating ourselves up over what we've already done, but sort of exploring and just building the future. And okay, it's hard to explain over the phone, but everyone can get my book and read it. It's not a hardcore geeky engineering book. It's more of a understanding of this period of transition for everyone, policy, business, society, and engineering. And so the way that I would see it is that we have a coming together of our institutions, so our universities, our trade schools, with our communities, our councils, and our businesses. And we do need to unlock the old ways that we've thought about how we do things. So, you know, you had ministerial funding of some research or you know, that it's sort of like, well, here's what we want and we'll decide. And so that's fine. You can have money coming from the top down, but you've got to have the projects coming from the ground up. And so we do need a new thing, and that is a new way of doing things.
Don't forget those private investors, whether they're the super fund or the other institutional investors looking for somewhere to put their money at the moment. Are you talking about new consortia that might bring together what's happening in a university with what's happening in a private firm somewhere, with what's happening in a local council planning department somewhere? Is that what you're talking about? Into a consortium?
Oh, there. You said it better than me. Thanks.
What areas hold the most promise immediately? We've been trying to do things with public transport forever. We've had groups coming out and say, look at our houses. If you got money to spend, let's spend it on a mass sort of, you know, housing upgrade. You'll get bang for buck out with health as well. What are the areas where you see the opportunity to make an immediate start?
All right. I'm sure everybody's got at least one handful of things that if they think they go away from New Zealand for 10 years, they come back and they look and they're like, oh man, that's good you sorted that out. Right? So our housing, especially our leaky home syndrome legacy, haven't yet dealt with that really. Our legacy of pre-standard homes that are now, you know, moldy and unhealthy. So definitely our housing. But you can't use the same thinking at all. You know, let's put a few pink bats in the ceiling. That won't cut it, because what that legacy is can't really support us going forward. So it's almost like rebuilding the country and in a new way. So the way we finance it, the way we think of property, the way we think of your place in a city. And these are things that in my research, I can now see how we could do that. And so I think we're done with research. We know how to build proper things. It's that action of just doing it and learning by doing. So in my head, I keep seeing the moonshot. They did not know how to do that before they started doing it. You just get onto it. A consortia where the investors find a way to build real value through building real things. and not through speculation. And people find their place in those new buildings, not just by promising 10 or 11 or 12 times their annual salary and locking themselves into debt forever, but by new ways of thinking about how we do this project of housing ourselves. If you think long term, you get whole new ideas.
Just run through. Susan, I know you've just remodeled your own house, and just briefly run through. This wasn't about getting some double glazed windows and some better underfloor insulation. What did you learn from that project about this longer term transitional thinking?
Okay. The number one learning came when I had the whole building crew over. I worked with a really good builder, and I sort of did this project of mine. I'm in Christchurch, yeah. And so the quake did what finally I had wanted to do for a long time, which is to cause me to deconstruct my house down to the old Rimu frame and do it back as basically to the highest standard you can get internationally. And I had a builder along on that journey who had never done most of the things that I wanted to do. And I gave lessons on heat transfer and thermodynamics and moisture ingress and all sorts of things as we went along. And we somehow managed to get it in around the standards because we're going beyond those standards by quite a bit. And the moment of reckoning was when I had the whole crew over for burgers after the house was all done and we were moved in. And they were just looking around and feeling how warm it was and just ridiculously comfortable and just saying, you know, we're so dumb. Why? It should be illegal to do anything but this. It did not cost more. We now understand what we should be doing. Can you teach New Zealand how to do this? All right. So that was the winning moment there. And I would love to do that. That's the thing we need to do, is to teach all of us how to not just rebuild the existing homes, because my home had a few things that made me want to try to resurrect it as opposed to turning it into recycled lumber.
Susan, there's one thing I am keen to pick up with you again, because last time we spoke, we were talking about this, which is to be careful in our renewable energy, to be careful about some of the big investments we've seen if the whole system is to work. Things like wind turbines and solar energy, I think there was the German example you gave, which didn't work out to be quite as cost effective. If we're looking again at our overall energy investments, do we need again to have this very broad multidisciplinary look at what to do?
Yes, please. Because again, this one particular project of my house and trying to use it as a model, I went from 3,600 kilowatt hours in the month of June before down to 900 kilowatt hours in the month of June after. Our problem, we have enough electricity supply in our country. We actually do. What we have is a peak demand problem in the winter at very specific times. Wind and solar don't help that. Taking our housing electricity demand down by more than two-thirds would fix that, and we'd all be comfortable and healthy. So thinking of things in a system-wide view, putting all those things together, that's the sort of thing that really would be new for us, and kind of where I'm suggesting that we can go.
I know there's a no-fly Convergence for Carbon Transition conference happening in November, I think, and
yes,
this is going to showcase what some of the transition engineers in New Zealand are doing. Could you give us an example of one or two?
Sure. One of my favorites, we've got people who are interested in waste, we've got people who are interested in housing, transport, all sorts of things like that. But the thing that fits best with our conversation so far is a way, we call it a social business because we think it's a way for investors to come together with property owners, to come together with the council, to come together with the community. And essentially, we've built a computer program that trolls through lots of data and finds where a place in your city, so we've worked on Christchurch and Auckland and Dunedin, a place in your city where going forward in time, you just see that city developing into a permanent urban type of form that we don't really understand now. We don't have. We've got a little bit of it, say, along Cuba Street in Wellington, but this sort of mixed-use, very vibrant type of urban form and what it would take to get there. And then we work through how do we actually accomplish that. So the property development plan, the zoning changes, the financing, the timeline, the square meters of what, the costings, so all that boring engineering stuff so that you actually can achieve a, you might call it urban renewal, but I wouldn't call it renewal. I would call it building the future, really, because that will be there several hundred years from now. And our little homes that we built in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s won't. So Susan, we've got to rebuild everything anyway. The things that we've built in New Zealand were temporary. They were, you know, getting stuck in. Do you know of any houses that are older than 100 years? Not many. So in the next 100 years, the sort of temporary housing that we put up, we will rethink and rebuild that anyway. Can do it now and keep ourselves healthy while we're at it.
Susan, come and talk to us in November again. Thank you very much. Dr. Susan Crumdyke, Professor of Mechanical Engineering at the University of Canterbury.